Welcome back. It's now time for this day in history. It's Tuesday, July the 16th. This was a day in 1790 that Washington, D.C. was declared the new capital of the United States, built on the back of slaves. We didn't celebrate that then, though. In 1809, the city of La Paz, which is today Bolivia, declares its independence from Spain, from the Spanish crown, during the La Paz Revolution, and forms Junta Tutiva, the first independent government in Spanish America, led by Pedro Domingo Murillo. This is important because we don't talk about this in our history enough, which is what Latinos did to stand up for their freedom and independence in Latin America. It was a threat in many ways to this American democracy to see brown people standing up for their own. This was this day in 1861, the American Civil War, Union troops began a 25-mile march into Virginia. It became the first Battle of Bull Run, which is the first major land battle during the Civil War. And this is a day that Ida B. Wells Barnett, the pioneering African-American journalist, newspaper editor, and civil rights leader, was born in 1872. Also born on this day in 1882 was V.A. Johnson. She was the first black woman to argue before the Supreme Court. And a day that will live in infamy for some, 1945, the world's first atomic bomb was detonated in Alamogordo, New Mexico, which led to the deaths of thousands of people from cancer as a result of living too near that blast. And this is the birthday of Assata Shakur, aunt of Tupac Shakur, revolutionary fighter, Black Panther leader, who was born on this day in 1947. It's the day that Catcher in the Rye, that caused such an explosion in the publishing world, was published in 1951. And this is interesting juxtaposition. This is the day in 1973 that the White House tapes were revealed during the Watergate investigation. And it revealed the existence of a secret taping system which contained all the information incriminating President Nixon, but incriminating this government in terms of the secret policies of the federal government. And for years, Congress tried to keep that in check. People kept that in check until now. And that now is, we've seen the NSA tapes being released, and we see what the government's back up to again. And it leads to 2002, 29 years later, when President George W. Bush announced his plan for the Homeland Security Department, Department of Homeland Security, in the wake of the terrible bombings on September 11, 2001. But now we're in the midst of that battle again, of fighting for our security as citizens of this country. Well, that's today in history. One more happy thing. This is the birthday of our dear friend and colleague, Rain Pryor, born in 1969. Happy birthday, Rain. Since we're in the midst of the 50th anniversary of when the National Guard came into Cambridge, Maryland, when white segregationists attacked civil rights workers in Cambridge, very famous photos, many of you will remember, of Gloria Richardson standing in front of bayoneted National Guardsmen. She, of course, was the leader in Cambridge, a woman who stood up and led the movement there, among many others. Many people were arrested. I was there then in 1963. In Cambridge. It was part of our work here in Baltimore, the Civic Interest Group, the Baltimore arm of SNCC. And so we were there when this happened. And so to honor that time and to celebrate that time, we are going to bring you some interviews today. 2 years ago, I conducted interviews with many African-Americans from Cambridge, Maryland, who stood up and fought segregation and were among those arrested and beaten and jailed in Cambridge, Maryland, to tell their living stories of what that period was like and what happened in those days. So I now bring you those stories and hope you enjoy them. Up first, we'll hear from Inez Stafford Grubbs. She was co-chair of the Cambridge Nonviolent Action Committee, known as CNAC, with Gloria Richardson. CNAC was an affiliate of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee and inspired by the Freedom Rides. Stafford Grubbs was 18 when she became co-chair of the group, and she joins us today to share her memories of that time and her thoughts about race in Cambridge today. Then we'll be joined by Betty Jackson, the wife of civil rights activist Fred Jackson and the mother of Cambridge's current mayor, Victoria Jackson Stanley, and by Francine Wolford, who was also a student demonstrator. Up first, here's our conversation with Inez Stafford Grubbs. So here we are in Cambridge, and I'm sitting with Inez Stafford Grubbs.
Cambridge, Maryland.
Cambridge, Maryland. Thank you. Not Massachusetts.
Thank you.
It's a big difference.
Big difference.
Big difference.
Give us some credit.
You deserve a lot of credit. So one of the we've interviewed Mayor Jackson a few times. Mm-hmm. And because when I saw, I remember when she was elected, I was just overwhelmed by the idea that not just a black person, but a black woman is elected mayor of Cambridge. It must have been overwhelming for you, too.
Oh, yes, naturally, yes. And especially since she's family, but then I think all of Dorchester County is family.
It's a small community.
Yes, yes.
And so, and you were close, you were in the movement back in the early 60s.
Yes.
And so were you in high school then?
Just leaving high school, just graduating from high school.
So what drove you into the movement? What pushed you into
history? History. I'm sure I'm like a lot. Well, probably the majority of most black young people during that period. That when we talked about slavery in school, that I remember having the feeling that had I been around during that time, there would not have been slavery. I'm serious.
I hear you. Yes. Yeah, yes.
That I would have taken care of the situation. You know, everybody would have been free. No slavery whatsoever.
There's something about this community. Well, there are two things. Something about this community in Cambridge where, despite the oppression that was pretty severe in your time coming up and before, there was a backbone in this community that seemed to stand up. What do you think it was? What is it about this community that was so powerful?
First, I just wanted to thank you for recognizing that. But history again, I guess it's because folk grew up, were in a time where our senior citizens always made sure that we knew what was going on. Church played a strong role in when I was growing up and before, and people looked out for each other. And I know that when I was growing up in my household, I remember people coming, if someone was sick, a stranger had gotten sick or something, they would bring them to our house for my mother. My mother did taxes, and it wasn't that she was doing it for money, but people looked out for each other. And I know my family knows its history, knows its ancestral history, that my mother's parents, the slave who, enslaved person who came from Africa, came from Senegal, and all of this information was handed down. And when we have the information, then we know from whence we cometh. We know that we belong to something or somebody. We are part of a group. And all of this helps to build everybody. And we have had a cohesiveness. Some of it's lost now. It's not like it used to be. but we still have people who are willing to take that responsibility and try to pass it on. But I think a lot of that helped us when we were growing up. Even the bars, the people had the bars, some you may call them something else at that time, but they also made time for us. They had nights where we could go and there was no liquor around.
Where young people could go in, you mean?
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. And we were in school. The Elks, not that there was no visible signs of alcohol, that they made sure that we had a place to dance. But because the people were willing, we had so much going for us. We had our own little league teams, and everybody just worked together. I can remember walking through Pine Street, which we said is the Harlem of
the black community.
Of Cambridge. And I can remember the people sitting on their porch as I was walking through the street. And we knew that these folk were watching us and made sure that we did what we were supposed to do and act the way we were supposed to act. Even going in front of the church, when we passed the church, we had to stop talking We were quiet. We would just talk. People talked. Vacation Bible school went 2 or 3 weeks, and the teachers helped, public school teachers helped. And that's another thing. Even in the schools, I feel sorry for the children now. And I'm not a regular substitute in the schools, but I do substitute when their backs are against the wall. They can't find anybody to do it.
We're talking about the segregated school system that you came
from. No,
right?
I'm talking about now.
Now.
I want to talk to show the difference between what was happening when I was growing up. And when I'm in the school, I see the discipline, the lack of discipline. And a lot of it is because the parents aren't taking their responsibilities. And I unfortunately, for instance, I only substitute in the middle school. There are no people like our black kids in the classrooms. They're all white. So, and then I look at the situations in the school, and there are things that we had done. We had a rich, even though the schools were segregated, we had a rich experience in our schools because our teachers would do so much to make sure that we had these experiences. And we were, and I think part of that was because most of our teachers came out of the South, and they came from the Southern schools, so they had the experiences and they would pass it on. It was a good time. It was a good time being in the black community. And I just feel sorry now because our children don't have that experience that we had, because people aren't, I can't say they aren't willing to take ownership, but they aren't taking ownership. And so going back to your question, why, it was because everybody had, most people had felt ownership, and they felt the responsibility of helping each other.
And when you were 18, you graduated from
I wasn't 18, I was 17.
17, sorry. You were 17. And CNAC began, the Cambridge Nonviolent Action Committee, 1961, right?
It was around that time. Yes. Yes,
and
1961.
And Gloria Richardson, who was older, was helping to lead it and pull it together, but it was really filled with lots of young people. The young people really were a motivating power inside that group.
Let me go back to the history of CNAC. Actually, Freddie St. Clair, Gloria's first cousin, was the one who met with the Freedom Riders. And that's how things got started here in Cambridge. Of course, we knew about what was happening down south and the students at the lunch counter and so forth. And so that was the motivation for us also. Just as though we see in northern part of Africa now, that the young man burned himself, and so that now we see all this happening in Egypt and all these other countries. And so that's what this is Inez speaking for Inez, but I feel that that's what helped us to get started. Also, the fact that we had these inner feelings that we wanted to do something about it, and we had been taught about the history. Fortunately, and we're blessed that Harriet Tubman was born and raised here in this county. And there are other people like Samuel Green and other historians, historical figures that we could draw from and knew about. Then we have, even in my denomination, in which I grew up from the Crater Roll, the African Methodist Episcopal Church was founded by Richard Allen. So we just had people with whom we could draw from, and people who taught us, and parents who accepted responsibility. And we just stayed busy. And then when I go back to the school system, I can think of the activities that we had where people felt ownership, and it wasn't about big families, you know, families who had more money. Everybody, basically, from my memory, my childhood memory, accept ownership and felt the responsibility of helping wherever they could.
So you started off by talking about the beginning of CNAC and how it started.
Oh, yeah, CNAC, Cambridge Nonviolent Action Committee, Freddie St. Clair.
Freddie St. Clair.
Yeah.
Freddie was a St. Clair. Her family was St. Clairs, right?
Yes, their families. Yes, her mother was a St. Clair.
Right, right.
And Freddie met with the Freedom Riders. And then, so I heard about it. Mr. Orville McBride, who was very prominent in the community and a member of St. Luke Church, he was Methodist. They're United Methodist now. And he told me about the Freedom Riders were coming. I had gone to see him and visiting him at his house, and he told me about it. He was president of the NAACP. And so, and when he told me that, I thought, this is it. This
is you knew it. About the Freedom Riders before this.
Oh, yeah. That's what I'm talking about, right, what happened down south. And the first mass meeting was held at Wall Chapel United Methodist Church. It's United Methodist now, wasn't then. And so we went to the meeting, and we just had a walk through downtown. And at that time, I remember going up the steps to go back after we had done our march around through the town, and looking down, and I could see everybody, and I saw some of the teachers. But, and that was the only time that they had been allowed to participate, because now we know for sure that they had been threatened, that their jobs had been threatened if they had continued to march. And so after that march, then there was a meeting at St. Luke Methodist, which is United Methodist Church. And at that point, the CNAC was organized. It didn't have that name at that time, but that's when the officers were elected. And Dr. Fassett, prominent doctor here in Cambridge, black doctor, nominated Freddie as the chairperson, and Inez Stafford Grubb as the co-chairperson. And so that's how we got started from there in the offices and so forth.
And you were just 17 at the time.
No, I was 18. I was 17. I was 18 by that time.
But when you became co-chair. Mm-hmm. And eventually it was you and Gloria who were co-chairs together, right?
Initially it was Freddie.
You were Freddie. And then you and Gloria.
And then Gloria. What happened, Freddie was also the bondsman. And as you know, there were so many people getting arrested that he was so busy that it was just too much for him to be the chairperson as well as the bondsman. So it was agreed that Gloria would replace Freddie so that he could do the work that he was doing, get us out of jail.
You see, that to me, and I was really excited when I realized that you were going to be one of the people to join us today.
Oh, somebody's excited to see me. Thank you.
Because I remember when Gloria became co-chair with you, mm-hmm. and we were coming down here mm-hmm. from Civic Interest Group in Baltimore. Most of the people then were...
I haven't heard that in so many years.
The Civic Interest Group?
Yeah.
CIG.
Yeah.
Skip Logan and Bill mm-hmm. Henry and
yes.
everybody.
Yeah.
That one of the things, and it didn't really strike me until later, as I was contemplating thinking about Cambridge as mm-hmm. the movement in Cambridge, that the powerful role that women played in the movement in Cambridge, which in some ways was atypical, it really didn't happen in many other places, mm-hmm. where, because the men ran it, they wanted to keep the women in the background, but here the women were in the foreground of the power and leadership of the movement.
Okay, and if you notice, it was mostly women out there on the picket lines.
Yeah.
Because the men were working. Mm-hmm. And then if you think about it, when we had our mass meetings in the church, if it was at night, the men were there, but the men were working. My father was one of them. He worked in Seaford. He was a laborer at DuPont's. And 30 miles away, but when he came back in Cambridge, then he was there.
And when in this movement, give people a sense of what it was like in terms of for you to have to demonstrate and what you faced in this community at that time.
I guess because this was an opportunity to right some awful wrongs, the chance to try to do that, that what we face, I had no sense of danger. But basically, it was the police. It just seemed like the least little thing I did, they would arrest me. You know, one time I said a little bad word because they were just picking at us. And because I'm not a cusser. So it was a little bad word. And it's a word that my mother laughed about every time she thought that I thought it was a cuss word. And she never failed to tell that story every opportunity that she got. But I said this little bad word, and I can remember the two police officers. One was getting in the car on one side, and the other was getting in the other side when they had said something to me. And I guess in my frustration, I said this little bad word. And I remember them looking at each other, and I knew, and I kept walking, and I knew they were coming after me, which they did. You know, just the least little things. But you know what? Those two police officers and I became very good friends.
Really?
Years later, yes, because we worked at the Eastern Shore Hospital Center, and we would eat lunch together and talk, but I never brought it up to them. I know that it was behind their mind, and they knew one day I would do it, but I didn't do it.
But you never did?
No, I never did do it. I did, when I had gotten arrested, some more, it was about five or six of us, had gotten arrested at one of the lunch counters, and a woman had thrown water in my face and a whole lot of stuff. And she was working at the hospital also. Well, you know, we didn't have that many jobs by then. Phillips Packing Company closed, and right. And that sort of gotten us in more of a poverty situation here in Cambridge. It just stayed with me because I knew she didn't know who I was. She didn't, because of the situation in the restaurant, because here were all these white men standing behind us and everything, and we sitting at the counter. And so I mentioned to one of my friends who had also become friends with this lady, and I told her about it because she had thrown water in my face. And I told Gloria about it, and Gloria said, "You need to say something to her."
And Gloria Richardson, you were talking.
No.
Different Gloria.
A different Gloria. Yeah. Yes, I'm sorry.
That's right. Just checking.
Like you can see, Gloria standing here, and so I did what she said, and I went over there. I called her and I told her to want to come and talk to her for a minute, and then I sat down at her desk and I talked to her, and then she explained to me that she felt pressured to treat us the way she did. Because of their business, they would not have had their. They would have to have closed their door if they had not responded the way they did. But you know, and I see her, and we hug each other, and everything. So, time can heal a lot of wounds. Not all wounds, but
not all wounds,
but a lot of them.
What has there been? This is jumping ahead a little bit, but has there been ever any real dialogue in this community between the white world and the black world, from people who lived through that era or with and for their children, about what happened and kind of like truth reconciliation like they did in South Africa?
It probably, not the way you're putting it, but there have been maybe situations, I'm sure other folk had the same kind of opportunities as I did to establish a relationship with some of the people who weren't very nice to us during that time. But there were some white folk. I will never, never forget Wilbur and Catherine Newcomb. They were white, and they would ride a lot, you know, and they'd go out riding, and they'd see us like they're on the picket line, and then they'd spot me, and they'd pull over to the curb. And I walk over to the curb and talk to them. And then after a while, I go on back. No matter where they saw me, what the situation was, Wilbur and Catherine Newcomb would always stop and talk to me because Catherine was one who was trying to help me to learn how to sew in the sewing factory. My mother wasn't good at that either. She wasn't a very good cook either, but I can tell that. But she fixed enough. Then she was good on bread though. But then when I went to work in the Department of Rehabilitation Therapies, in which they've changed the name to Activity Therapies at the State Hospital, I worked with Wilbur and Catherine Newcomb's daughter-in-law, and we got to be very good friends. So, you know, human beings are strange folk, you know, a strange species, I should say.
Mark Steiner Show is sponsored in part by the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. Mortgage late? Don't wait. What if you're struggling with your mortgage? The state of Maryland is offering housing counseling and legal assistance. Maryland's HOPE program can even help you understand the state's mediation law and the Attorney General's National Foreclosure Settlement. Don't wait. Get help today. More information at mdhope.org or at 877-462-7555. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and today we're talking on this 50th anniversary of the battle in Cambridge to end segregation when the National Guard came in because segregationists were attacking African Americans throughout the community. We'll come back to our conversation. Here's Inez Stafford Grubbs and Betty Jackson and Francine Wolford.
Because it was a pretty, that time, I'm sure as you remember and as I remember, it was a very also violent time.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, people would drive through, white people would drive through the black community at night and fire and shoot and mm-hmm. carry guns and mm-hmm. try to intimidate people.
Mm-hmm. But if you also notice, too, they would be flying through there. Now, it was a bad time. I'm maybe sounding as though I'm taking it lightly, but it was not a light experience. But life goes on. You have to try to make a life for yourself, but then also be very cautious. And I knew that where I lived, that and folk probably on the other side of town, the white folk had to have known that where we live, my parents, because they were very involved, as well as of course me, and then that we also had people living with us who came from Swarthmore and Baltimore and right. other places, and there was a couple by the name of Martin. I think about them quite often because they came one summer to help with literacy I can't remember where they were from, but it was just something special about that couple. And so, but anyway, I knew they knew where we lived. As a matter of fact, when the National Guard came in, they were up there by our house, and my daddy would go out in the back, bang on the trash can, and then walk back in the house, and here they come with their rifles, you know, trying to find out where all this noise is coming from. So, even though we had to be cautious, but I might as well go ahead and say it. I know that it was affecting me, but I did not know how much I was being affected until a few years later. Mm-hmm. And then I realized, you got the crazies, you know? Yeah, but I did not know that it had affected me that seriously.
The pressure, the violence.
Yeah,
the threat
I
of
did.
Violence.
Yeah, the threat, because you never know, you never knew what was going to happen, and even marching, I just didn't know what was going to happen. I remember that I was leading a group, and we were going through Ray Street. Eventually, it's Popular Street after you cross over Gay Street, and there was a business on the corner. And I hope he hears it because I forgive him. And when I was walking by, two men were standing in the door. One was the owner. I recognized him, and he called me a bad word. Now, it wasn't one of those little words like my mother would laugh about that. I told her that, you know, could I say those words, and she said no. I said, well, they were bad words. It was cussing, but it was a seriously bad name. And when I turned, it was like he had disappeared in thin air. That's what I'm talking about. That's what I meant when you said when I asked you, they were flying through the streets, weren't they? Because, and another time, I was walking home and I crossed over Muir Street to get to my house. And I looked down Muir Street and here was a mass of people out there just screaming and howling, you know, like they wanted to come down Pine Street. Like they wanted to come, let us through. It was only two cops right there that could have come on. I looked at them. I didn't even go back and tell anybody because I knew if they had all those folk, they could have just gotten right past the police officer and bust through come on down Muir Street and go down Pine Street. They didn't want to. They were just entertaining each other. I walked on home and got into bed. But had they come, but there was always that possibility that they could have done that. Because it was a lot of them. And it would have been a very serious matter. It would have been blood. For sure, but they didn't have the heart. They had just had the mouth.
That's part of what I meant when I said there was something different about Cambridge. I mean, you had a nonviolent movement, but people in their homes and their cars also carried guns. People were going to stand up nonviolent in a demonstration, but if their homes and community were attacked, they were going to fight back.
Yes, because unbeknownst to my parents, my sister, I'm the youngest of three. My mother and her sister raised a bunch of the other siblings because their parents died early. They were fairly young, and there was 11 of them all together. But after they died, then those two raised the others. So we always had a house full of people, too. But unbeknownst to them, my sister's boyfriend gave me a gun. And I had a gun for a while until I got some sense, you know, and I gave it back to him. Yes, we did have guns for protection. And it wasn't something that some of my girlfriends knew. I had showed it to them. And they were aware that I had a weapon. But yeah, we did. But if I had to use it, I would have used it. But I didn't have to.
You were arrested a lot of times.
Only six times.
Six times.
Yes.
And one of those times was one of those times when you and Gloria and the rest were kept in jail for a while.
Gloria was in jail after that. We weren't arrested at the same time.
You were not arrested at the same time.
No, we weren't arrested at the same time. She was arrested after that. Yeah.
Tell me your remembrances of Gloria Richardson too. What was it like for the two of you to collaborate and work together?
Generally, it wasn't just the two of us. It was because we had the executive committee, of the Cambridge Nonviolent Action Committee. And you have to remember that we were an offshoot of SNCC, Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. So there were discussions, you know,
it was a very democratic group.
Yes, it was. It
right.
really
That's
was.
That's how it was formed. Mm-hmm.
Yes, it was. Even though we had had the elections of officers, there were still others who had input, you know. So it was the planning and then also the letting off steam, joking, you know, and so forth. And then there were the times when we had the curfews, and we always had a way of getting through and around the curfews and could go over to other towns and be able to let off steam dancing and talking and so forth. Yeah, so but it was always there. The fact that this was war. You know, it wasn't W-A-R.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was war. But during that time it was just like, this is what takes place, you know, this is what happens. And it just wasn't the few people, it was the majority of the black community and even the elderly people and those, the senior citizens who could not take the walk and so forth, the walk through Pine Street and from Bethel AME Church and walk from there downtown to Race Street. They would do other things, cook rolls and all that kind of stuff and feed us. And I told you my mama wasn't the best cook in the world. Everybody was participating. I wish I could remember Happy Lee's last name, our real name. We called him Happy. But I can remember him with his four children, little children. And he had the hands of... he was holding the hands of two of them, and then the other two, because there were two boys and two girls, walking along and going downtown to demonstrate. And people like that, you just had, it was just a time when you look, you could see that, look what's happening, how we're all together and people making these sacrifices. He had his children in that crowd, It was a trying time, but at the same time, I guess when reflection is when you really see what you were involved in, and didn't even, like I said, I didn't realize how it was affecting me, but even now I think about some things from time to time, and because it has changed here, but then there's still a lot the same.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we still have some ways to go. We still have our issues here. We have come a long ways, but we still have a lot of distance to travel.
Because there's also, I mean, if I remember, I didn't come back here after 63.
You weren't afraid, were you?
Huh? No.
Okay.
Well, you know, you remember when you said, what was the word you used? You said you had the crazies?
Yeah, had the crazies, yeah.
I do know that after that experience in the Eastern Shore,
mm-hmm.
those 2 years,
mm-hmm.
that I always, something like this kind of thing came over me every time I came to the Eastern Shore.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, always looking mm-hmm. around and not sure what was going to happen. I still get it
mm-hmm.
once in a while if I drive down certain mm-hmm. roads or streets, or you can, you know, mm-hmm. it's just like something, the things come back.
Yeah.
From
yeah.
that period. Because it was so full of tension and violence. It was so mm-hmm. much threat of physical mm-hmm. violence all the
yes.
time.
Yes, yes.
But, you know, I went away somewhere else. And so even though the civil rights movement, the public accommodations was passed,
mm-hmm.
it remained tense.
Yes, yes, and we still have problems here. We still have problems. We have a black mayor, yes, black female mayor,
mm-hmm.
yes, and but which is great, but there are still issues, and a lot of it is underlying, and folk think that you don't know what's happening.
So I asked earlier when we talked about the civil rights movement here, and I mean the tensions in Cambridge were pretty high. They were high mm-hmm. in 61, 63, but they were also high up to 68,
mm-hmm.
Rap Brown incident, mm-hmm. everything. I mean the tensions remained high. And you all lived here through that whole period?
Yes, I'm born here.
And Rhett Brown got Rhett Brown wasn't responsible for that fire. There were fires several nights leading up to that night. And someone, some white person downtown, where after the fire got started, and had to, and I believe knew that the fire was going to be of that magnitude. That was the plan, and he said, "Let it burn." And there are a lot of people in town who knew about that, and then about him having said that, and then he didn't let the fire company come out, and when they did let a fire truck, one fire truck come out, it was manned by black men, and at that time the fire company was segregated, and they had to, I can see them now trying to get things done, trying to figure out what to do. And I remember that little squirt coming out of the hose before they could really get it to have some pressure to it. And so that's why it got as far as it did, burned down the church and so forth. And it may have been black people who started it, because, you know, you can always find somebody, especially when you're bringing in some change or something, that that started the fire. And as I said, it was a street over. We have Pine Street, and the street, next street parallel to it is Schoolhouse Lane, and that's where the little fires had been each night leading up to the big fire. But and we've never gotten back on our feet, because the funds that had been promised to the African-American community, or the black community, whatever you want to call us, that it has never come to fruition. We haven't seen a penny of it. I believe it's going downtown.
And that was 1968 when the fire took place, right?
Yes. 68
or 67.
67,
one of them.
Yeah.
Give or take.
Has Cambridge become an integrated city?
Well, we have black folk living where they hadn't lived before, and that's a lot of it is because some of the houses were substandard,
right.
and we have a housing code now, and I serve on the Housing Board of Review, and we haven't had a meeting in 2 years, this November it'll be 3 years, because the meeting has to be called by the Department of Public Works, and has been brought to the attention of others. But I'm the vice president of that, and I've asked the president call a meeting so we can at least take an assessment of what's happening in Cambridge. He hasn't done it as of yet, but I'm sure he's. But as vice president, I guess I eventually can do it.
Well, what was it like when Gloria Richardson then became Gloria Richardson Dandridge, got married and left? Did things?
Oh, it was horrible. It seemed like when she got married, things just disbanded real kind of easy, you know.
It calmed down some, yeah. I don't think it was.
Come back to visit every now and then. She's still coming back to Cambridge. Mm-hmm. But another thing, we're talking about segregation. In the Second War, it was all black. We had, if the people were going to vote, we could really have things done, but they wouldn't go. Then after a while, they decided, well, since the black people got too much power, they decided to split us up. First, some of the Second War people in the Third War, and then some of the Second War people in the First War. You know, this now it's not no more Second War now.
As a matter of fact, where I live, I think I've been out of the Second War twice. I'm back in the Second Ward now, but I was in the Fourth Ward, you know, and so forth. And right now we're getting ready to come up on the time to do some redistricting again. So hopefully that we'll have enough representation that we can get something done, get the lines drawn.
How big is the city council?
It's five.
And how many representatives are African American?
One.
And what percentage of the city is African American?
I would imagine we may still be the largest as far as the not necessarily the Second Ward, but as far as black people, I think we are the majority now. Not that much, but we are the majority. But we don't have that behind the scenes opportunity, and I think folk need to step up to the plate. Black folk need to step up to the plate.
But it's a lot of black people mixing with one another. That's all. You know, they mix, and they didn't mix back in the 60s.
They mix,
but they mix and they living together. You see them staying together more than you ever seen. Ray Street is loaded with black folk. It was a time when you didn't see too many black people there.
The economy.
Yeah, it took them down.
Well, Ray Street was that aptly named.
Yes, right. But it wasn't because of it. Wasn't because
we never thought of that.
Yeah, but it wasn't because of the color of the people at the foot of Ray Street was a racetrack.
Right.
Yeah.
But that's what it was.
Yeah.
But it's
but it was aptly named.
The right name.
The right name, because they divided the races.
How we. I mean, it was very funny. When I remember being a kid here and realizing it was Race Street.
Mm-hmm.
And
everybody goes,
you know, it's like just that's the name, all right.
Yeah, that's it.
One side of the street was black, and the other side of the street was white.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And there was a side of the street that we got chased down.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right.
And I really believe they named it for that reason also.
No, it was a racetrack.
I remember it was a racetrack. But
I remember that.
Well, I've seen it in the books,
oh, okay.
You know.
Say, okay.
I was born in 1944.
Can I tell your age?
1944.
That's a good year.
Huh?
It's a good year.
It's a good year, but I'm just saying, thank the Lord I've lived this long to see changes and everything.
Okay.
Yeah, the Lord's given me a chance to get it together.
And we were talking before y'all came in about how the movement, in a lot of ways, was a lot of the younger people really were at the forefront of this movement.
Mm-hmm.
SNCC came in, Freedom Riders came in,
mm-hmm.
but SNCC ran. SNCC ran. I mean, ran it here. It was a high democratic movement.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like to run that movement, not you by yourself running it, but I mean just running it as a collectively running it as a democratic organization? It was really pretty amazing.
I think it was fun because we had people that was forward. You know, some people can, like, we can sit here and talk to you. We had people like Inez, Gloria Richardson. Yeah, I'm putting you first. Your father, your mother, they could talk to people. Well, I wouldn't really talk. I'd just stay in the background and push. Get them a good push, okay? I think that's how we got it going like that. They set me on the table and just discuss things. Just put it on the table and just air it out. I think that's what it got like it was.
It was the first time we've seen organization, you know, of the black people when that happened. So.
But it had happened before in the 30s.
What happened in the 30s?
In the 30s, there was a riot, an actual riot. I'm trying to remember what happened and what caused it, and I can't remember. But I remember my mother saying that she had to run out and get her, my Uncle Kermit, of all, you know him, had to run and get him out of the way, and because they were rioting through the streets. So this isn't the first.
Who was rioting? Black folks or white folks?
Black folk. Because, and it may have been white folks, because it seemed like to me it may have had to do something with employment. I can't remember now.
Do you remember at all, Mrs. Jackson?
No, because Uncle Kermit is older than Betty. Mm-hmm. He would have been older than Betty. His deceased. Now, they're all deceased of that generation. And my mother was the oldest, and she was the last to die. And I was the youngest of her children. But I'm still here. but I remember her having talked about. She lost a child because she got hit in the back. She was hit in the back when she was running to try to get him out of the way. It was like 1930 something, and I can't remember what it was, but I remember that she had a miscarriage because of it, and that would have been the oldest child. Yeah, so that's not the first time that there had been a riot, which I don't consider, as people refer to the demonstrations as riot here, but I don't consider that as a riot. Even though there had been things that had taken place, I don't consider it a riot. They didn't tear up the town.
And there was a time the National Guard took the town over.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
This was like an occupied city during the time when you were younger and the movement was going on.
That's when we had the curfew and everything. Yeah.
I remember they stopped my father. We were coming from the field. And he had a gun in that bus.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't search us. They just came up on the bus and went to the front, from the front to the back and off. And my father cussed. He said he was ready to blow him away. He wanted to get home.
Were the police or military?
It was. Did they have like the cross? Where it was in the national. It was the National Guard that stopped. Yeah.
What'd you say? What was it like to live?
I was in the reserves for a lot of years.
Where?
So in the Army Reserves for a lot of years.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So what was it like during that period when the National Guard was here?
I felt safe and comfortable by them being here because I figured nobody couldn't really come in my area where I live. Because National Guard was like on every block, more or less. So I felt really safe. At that time, I probably think different now since I got a little older, you know.
How'd you feel about it when they were here?
Oh, it didn't bother me one bit. Because we could move around freely. And as I told you earlier, with my father would do something just to make them come off their posts and running around trying to hear where the noise was coming from. Yeah, it would have... My dad was something.
Yes, yes.
Did you all go to the March on Washington in 1963?
I did.
I was in
my brother John went.
Oh, I did. I have friends that we've been, friends for many years, and I was in Belmar, New Jersey, and I was coming, but I missed the bus, I think, or something like that, because there was a bus leaving out of Asbury Park. And I didn't get to the march on, but I got to the other marches.
You went.
I was working at the garment factory, and the union representative had a group of people there. That's how come I got a chance to go. I never got a chance to see Martin Luther King. I could have stayed home and seen him on television, but just the idea of being in that crowd and hear his voice of all those people, it was really nice.
Yeah.
That was an amazing day.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I got a picture too of it.
But all of my friends got to go. The gang got to go.
Did you go, Francie?
My brother John went. I was in New York at the time. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to go. John was in everything.
Yeah, John and I were classmates.
I remember reading this, the piece that Gloria Richardson wrote about what she had to go through in Washington, where they attempted to keep her off the stage and didn't want to let her speak and put her in the back. Do you remember any of that?
No, I don't remember that. Of course I wasn't there, but I don't remember her having had that problem. When you said Gloria didn't want her to speak, did she speak?
Then I think if I remember right, they let her say one word and then they cut her off.
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
You think they probably didn't want to hear about Cambridge. Was it the time when they had burned, when the bill
was? Well, remember Martin wasn't that...
Popular then at
the
time.
Yeah.
He just started
building. We just started building the stuff up
for Cambridge. So
there was something about the Cambridge movement where, like, the National NAACP, and for a period of time, some people like Martin Luther King and people around him were trying to get your movement to be quiet, to not
But you know what they would also do too is come to Cambridge and we would have a crowd naturally at our mass meetings and so forth. And then a check would be held up, you know, if anybody went to jail and they were going to use this check paid to help the volunteers so they could get out. And when the time came, they would have to wait until everybody else put their money in and never used it. So, you know. It's one family that I didn't care for that during that time. I was young. Now I'm old.
We have to take a very brief break, but don't go away.